Hello and welcome to ROH Review Interviews. I'm your host, three-time pro wrestling author, Oliver Newman. And once again, my co-host, pro wrestling journalist Stephen Jackson, is nowhere to be found. But I am delighted to be joined by the third ever and the second longest ROH Pure Champion, Hurricane John Walters. Hi, John. How you doing,
sir? Hey, nice to be with you. Good, my friend.
Very good. For myself, I'd interviewed John in 2008 in written form. And here we are 12 years later doing a live podcast, video and audio. The powers of the internet, John.
Insane. Yeah.
So, let's bring it right back to the beginning. When you heard about ROH, you know, what did you think about the product? And was it always a place you wanted to go?
Yeah, I think the first time I saw anything Ring of Honor related was when I got some DVDs. Because remember, back we're talking the early 2000s, it wasn't the YouTube internet world we live in now, where you can download every match that's ever happened, or there's always somebody with an iPhone recording matches. Back then, that wasn't as prevalent, so you had to get your hands on tapes. So I had a wrestling fan who turned promoter in the New England area who had all the tapes. He was a big independent wrestling fan, so he gave me a couple of Ring of Honor DVDs. Actually, I think they were probably VHSs then. And I think that just the crowd reaction and how the wrestling fans reacted to actual technical wrestling and work rate kind of really took me by surprise. Not that you didn't see that in other places, but that seemed to be where all the really good independent wrestlers were. So naturally, that's where I wanted to be, so I could test myself against them.
Yeah, and I got this obviously from Wikipedia and stuff, and just made sure it was reliable off there. You sent your footage to ROH earlier, I'm guessing in like 2002, mm-hmm. and then a chance meeting with Gary Michael Capetta at a chaotic wrestling event kind of led to your going to ROH?
Yeah, I had sent them a tape, and as you can imagine, they probably got hundreds of tapes because at that time they were the place to be. And never heard anything back. And I don't think it was that they didn't like my stuff. They might not have even watched it. And a lot of times in wrestling, it's who you know. Who you know might get you in the door, but if you're prepared and who you are, will keep you there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gary Capetta came to do a book signing and speech at the wrestling school I was training at. He had just written his book, and he was touring about it. And he was on an independent show 2 days after I met him doing the same thing. I wrestled. He saw my match. He liked it, pulled me aside, gave me some critique and some words of encouragement. And then I told him that I was trying to get into Ring of Honor, and he had a relationship with them already. So he kind of went to bat for me and submitted my information to them. And they called me, I think, the following weekend.
Yeah. Ahead of your ROH debut against Andy Anderson at ROH Do or Die, which actually fell on my birthday. So we're like incendiarily, linked because of that, John.
Of course.
You know, Paul London, CM Punk, and then yourself were kind of my ROH wrestlers, and I'm not afraid to say that out loud. So because you debuted on my birthday, I think we'll always be linked because of that. But, what did you, what were your thoughts and feelings leading up to the debut, and what did you think of the match yourself?
Well, I think at that point, so what year was that, 2003?
2003, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I started wrestling in 2000, so you got to remember, depending on what month that was, I was not even 3 years into the business. So 3 years in, I don't even feel like I was good at that point. So I'm sure I was nervous. I never really got super nervous for a show, because once you're out there and you're well-trained, you do what you train for. But I definitely had nerves. There was a lot of pressure, and that's all I really remember. I don't remember any I can't sit here and tell you any story that I threw up or anything like that before the match. I think it was kind of just like any other independent match, but there was bigger ramifications here because a bigger audience was watching it, and the potential to go to get booked more often was there. So there was more pressure, but I don't remember it being any different than any other show I'd been.
Yeah. This was May 31st. So if you need to know when my birthday is, John, that's the day.
May 31st. So I started January of 2000. So this was a little over, a little like 2.5 years or so. So
yeah, 2 years and about 4 months, isn't it? Yeah. So one of the best things did in ROH up until this point, teaming with Tony Mameluke in the Purists. Mm-hmm. What was it like? What was Tony like as a person and as a tag team partner?
Oh, he was awesome. I kind of lost touch with him. I've gone through about 10 cell phones since then, so I lose contact. I don't do iPhones. I have an iPad and I have an old school phone, so I lose.
Oh, he's got a block.
Yeah, so a lot of times if I lose a contact, I lose them unless they get back in touch with me. So I haven't really spoken to him much. I did see Little Guido at an independent show in New Jersey about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago that I was attending. And I chatted and asked him about him, and he said he was working a regular job and he wasn't wrestling at all. But really funny guy, you would think, because he was so intense in the ring that he was serious and intense out of the ring. But you'll find a lot of those guys are the opposite backstage. And super good worker, great bumper, and just all-around good guy. Yeah, we had fun. And I think if we had stayed together as a tag team, we would have had a better run, but they kind of saw other things wanting me to go singles.
Yeah. Well, Tony Mameluke was part of like the FBI and stuff, so I could imagine him being like fun to be around. But then he went serious in ROH because of the aforementioned matches with James Maritato, Little Guido, excuse me. So next up, you went into the Field of Honor. What were your thoughts and feelings before this tournament came to be?
I don't really remember what the Field of Honor was about. You'll have to refresh my memory. I mean, I remember it was a tournament, right? It was singles matches that was leading to something. I don't remember, but I know that's where Xavier and I started our feud. And that's all I can remember. I don't remember any other matches I had or if there was just a one. It's all a blur at this point, but I do remember being involved in it. I just don't remember what was the end goal for it.
Yeah, you had a match against Matt Stryker, and you started your feud against Xavier, like you said. It was a while ago.
I think the Matt Stryker match in Boston, is, if I can recall correctly.
There was two blocks, A and B, and then I'm guessing, long time ago, the final of that, you would get an ROH title shot. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because it was the ROH title, the tag titles at the time, the number one contender trophy. So it must have been for an ROH world title shot. Like you mentioned then, you came across him in the Field of Honor group, and then you started your feud with the second ever ROH champion and the all-around best Xavier. What did you think of this before it actually started? It was New York, Boston, so did you think it like kind of wrote itself?
Yeah, I think the bookers of Ring of Honor kind of saw me as this young up-and-comer, and they wanted me to be a babyface, kind of one of those intense babyfaces who didn't really talk much but just went out there and wrestled intensely. But I wasn't a rule breaker. I still just kind of got over by my wrestling, and Xavier was obviously a big-time heel, so they paired us up together, hoping that we could play off each other. The Boston, New York thing was also convenient, of course, because that's, as old as anything else in terms of rivalry. So, it was fun. Xavier was good. I think that was the first time we had ever wrestled. Maybe I wrestled him on an independent show before that. Again, it's all a blur, but I did know who he was, and I was familiar with his work, and I had seen some of those old tapes that I was telling you about before. I had seen him wrestle on those.
Yeah.
So I was looking forward to it. Yeah. And I think that when we built up to that big blow off match, the fight without honor, I think that was a good culmination to the feud, because up to then it was a lot of building up to that last match that really kind of was the icing on the cake.
Yeah. And much like all my other interviewees, you're reading my notes, John. That's the coming a little bit. So, like you said, in terms of what ROH saw in you, I think the actual litmus test for this was you was put in the ring in like consecutive shows or there or thereabouts with Christopher Daniels and with Homicide in two singles matches. So, take us back to the thoughts and feelings before those matches, because obviously big matches with, legendary people in the company. You know, what did you make of the before, during, and aftermath?
Yeah, I remember the Christopher Daniels match very well because I remember that was a show that I drove out to. It was up somewhere in upstate New York. I think it was in the Syracuse area, and I had lived in Boston at the time. So it was about a 3-4 hour drive, and I had driven up with Bobby Cruz, the ring announcer at the time, who's still the ring announcer, I believe.
Yeah.
And Todd Sinclair, who was the senior referee now, who hadn't even started reffing for them yet. He was a guy from the New England scene and just wanted to come along for the ride. And that ended up being the beginning of his Ring of Honor career. But oh, I remember Christopher Daniels was one of those guys from as far back as I remember my training. He was an indie name from California. And then he had done the stuff with WCW and a lot of WWE, WWF at the time, dark matches. And he's as smooth in the ring as anybody you're ever going to find. Literally smooth. I mean, that's just the only word you can use for Daniels. He's good. He's experienced, but everything he does is just very crisp and fluid. And I wasn't nervous. I've always been confident in my abilities, and I never looked at anybody as being better than me or above me, but I looked at everybody as somebody I could learn from and make magic together. So that's the way I looked at someone like Daniels. I said, this is going to be good for me. I'll hold my own, and we'll have a good match. And I remember it was about 20 minutes, and we didn't do a lot of high spots or any crazy stuff, but we just did a lot of old-school wrestling, and the crowd at the time was really, really into it. The Homicide match was a little different, a little more hard-hitting because that's his style. But Homicide's another guy. He can go. He can wrestle. He's a good wrestler. He just his gimmick is Homicide, so he's going to brawl a little bit more and be hard-hitter. But again, I think Homicide and I had wrestled before on the independent scene before Ring of Honor. I could be wrong, but I think we had. And again, another guy who was really good. And that match was real hard-hitting. I remember my back was bleeding after the match because he really scratched me in the back. But I wrestled him a few times. And all those guys, man, back then and still now were the top of the game. And anytime you could get in the ring with them and do stuff, it was just a magical thing. And those are the opportunities not only should you be grateful for, but they're the ones that make you a better wrestler in the end.
Yeah. And did you see at that moment in time that ROH was building you up with these singles opportunities?
Yeah, I think so, because I think this is I don't know if this is before I teamed with Mama Luke or after. I think this is probably all after, correct?
After,
yeah. Yeah, so we hadn't really been teaming up together anymore. And I don't even know, maybe you could answer this question, if Mama Luke was still in the company after we stopped tagging. I don't know if they kept using him or if he was gone.
He won ROH tag titles with Sara Nala little bit later. So he might have gone and then come back.
Okay. Yeah, I think they were booking me more in singles matches. And I think for whatever reason, they didn't say, hey, we're going to split you guys up. I think they just decided that maybe I'd be better singles. And I agree that I am. Not that I don't like doing tag matches, but I don't know if it's a selfish thing that I like to do more stuff. I don't really know the answer. Maybe subconsciously that's what it is. Maybe subconsciously we all kind of want the attention on us. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I've always been a singles wrestler. I will tag and I'll make the most of it, but fortunate for me, that's the way they saw me going and they made me a singles wrestler. So that was a good thing.
Yeah. I think with being a singles wrestler, it's on you, isn't it? As a tag team wrestler, you're just part of a team. So maybe you like the differences between the two.
I think so.
So, yeah, you and Xavier had this, amazingly simplistic feud. You fought each other in tags and singles. Xavier cheated and cheated. And then finally, this all built up to the Fight Without Honor at Final Battle 2003. Mm-hmm. For me, this was the match of the night, above all the All Japan stuff and all the other ROH stuff. I love the feud. That's why I'm so glad to get you on the ROH review interviews, just to hear your thoughts on it. So, yeah, what did you kind of think going into Final Battle 2003? And what were your thoughts on the match? And then what did you think, like, after the show had ended?
Well, being a guy that was always a kind of a technical wrestler and belonging to that pure wrestling division, it was an unofficial division, doing like ladder matches and hardcore matches and stuff like that was never really my thing. So I think when I went out there with him and we executed it well, it kind of surprised a lot of people because they were expecting me to be just this guy who just puts submission holds on and runs a few spots and has a good match, but they didn't expect that kind of violence. And it's not a kind of match that I prefer doing, because obviously that's going to ruin the longevity of your career.
Yeah.
But once in a while, if the storyline is correct and it's built right, like this one was, then there's nothing wrong with doing those as long as you're being safe. So no nerves. Again, I had done ladder matches for Chaotic Wrestling and done some, not hardcore, but ladders, chairs. I had used tables. So that wasn't new to me. So I was looking forward to it. I thought that once we put the match together, I said, this is going to be good. And there was a couple botches, small stuff, but overall, I thought it was good. People still talk about it. I still get emails every so often, people talking about that match. And I think it helped both of us. It got me more over as a babyface and somebody mm-hmm. that wouldn't take shit, I guess, from somebody. and then Xavier, of course, sold like an animal. So that was good for both of us.
Yeah, I think that's your exact response from the written interview in 2008.
Yeah. Well, my opinion very rarely changed, so.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, so next up was like a prelude to the ROH Pure title. You had a Pure Wrestling match against Chad Collier in the ROH Last Stand in 2004. Yeah. So, you know, what did you make of this? Was there kind of an intention to make a Pure Wrestling title at this point? And were you kind of, I don't know how to put this in another way, like the guinea pigs to see if that would work?
Yeah, I don't quite remember how they approached it. I do remember that match. It was in Baltimore or somewhere outside of Baltimore. It was in Maryland. And I remember Collier and I wrestling, and he was one of my favorites to wrestle. Another guy like Christopher Daniels, smooth, great wrestler. Severely underrated. I think Chad Collier was fantastic. Wish he got used more, but for whatever reason, he never really got that main event push. But he was one of my favorites, and easy to put matches together with him. And I don't really remember at that point. We had heard that the Ring of Honor was bringing a pure division in, and I remember being told the rules, and we kind of made the best of them, but. I don't remember how long this was before the tournament and if they were planning a tournament before that. That's something that the bookers would know, not me. But anytime you're involved with something, whether you like it or you don't like it, you make the best of it and you just kind of roll with it. And that Pure Wrestling title, because it was up my alley, it was something that I did enjoy doing. But mm-hmm. if I didn't enjoy it, I still would have done it. So not quite sure what their approach was and how long it took them to figure that out. But I don't think the Pure Wrestling title stuck around too long.
I think in this kind of situation, the Chad Collier match is Last Stand 2004, so I think January. And then the next question that I have is the Pure title tournament where you wrestled CM Punk. And I believe that's like at second anniversary show. So that's going to be in February. So they must have had something in mind, pure title-wise, I would imagine. Obviously, you might not know, but I would say it was in the process of happening. So, yeah, moving on to my next question. What was it like wrestling CM Punk in Boston for the Pure title tournament?
Yeah, that was great. Punk was one of those guys that I always clicked with in the ring. You know, you wrestle some guys that are good by the internet standards or by pro wrestling standards, and sometimes you just don't click with them. Mm-hmm. But Punk was one of those guys that I found very easy to work with. And you hear a lot of reputation and a lot of stories about Punk being a jerk and being difficult to work with, but he's always been very good to me. Was always cordial, always got along great, never put himself first in a match. It was kind of the opposite. He's always willing to go out there and bump and make you look good. So that mm-hmm. match was no different, especially being in Boston, where naturally I was the most over in Boston because that's where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I don't think there were any other guys on the Ring of Honor roster that were from Boston. So I got that kind of babyface hometown pop. But it was great. I remember the fans were expecting me to win that tournament because mm-hmm. I think that's kind of how they were building it. But then me losing in the first round to Punk got him more heel heat. And then kind of made me that underdog to go for the title somewhere down the line. But yeah, I thought it was great. And definitely a good live crowd reaction during that match.
Well, he came out as dressed as Christopher Daniels, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, So that was great. And now next up, you started feuding with Generation Next. Right. Did you see what they would become at the time? Austin Aries, Roderick Strong, Alex Shelley, and Jack Evans.
I think they formed the night that we had that 8-man tag match.
Yeah.
I remember that. Again, that was someone in the Northeast. I don't remember, but it was kind of one of those impromptu 8-mans where I think I was supposed to wrestle Jimmy Rave that night. And I don't even know if we did wrestle. Maybe we did have a short match, and then I think there was a run-in, and then they were going to jump the Briscoes, and then Rave and I came in to save the day, and we charged, did this kind of impromptu 8-man tag match. I think it was like almost an hour.
Yeah.
And fun. Those guys were all fun to work with. Roderick Strong at the time was kind of newer. They were all fairly new.
Yeah.
I had wrestled Austin Aries in the ECWA Super 8 tournament in Delaware in the second round. That was before he was really even well known. So I was familiar with him. I had wrestled Roderick Strong, I think, as well, or maybe that might have been one of the first times. And but you know, you're cordial with all those guys because you work shows with them, so you know them. Briscoes. I mean, it doesn't get much better than them. And Jimmy Rave and I had a good relationship, so it was just 8 guys who all were very comfortable with each other and liked each other. Kind of on this match, and I remember we didn't have much planned. We just kind of went out there and said, "Let's just wing it." And we did. You know, obviously, you have some things planned out for a match, but that was one of those ones where it was just kind of we just naturally went out there and said, "Let's just go have fun," and that's what we did. And crowd ate it up. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, those guys became kind of a big stable, and I feuded with them for a little while. But not sure if the feud itself really got over well, but you know, some of the matches did.
Well, yeah, I think the thing in 2004, you had your sights on Generation Next and on the ROH Pure title. Mm. So you were busy, basically. You'd had your sights set on the ROH Pure title, and you finally won it against, you know, one of the British wrestling legends, Doug Williams, in obviously your home state of Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, what did this mean to you?
Yeah, that was fun. And Doug Williams is one of those guys, again, before I started with Ring of Honor, before I really got any independent wrestling hype or publicity, he was a guy I had known about because he had come over to New England and wrestled some independent shows for a smaller promotion before. And obviously he had been in Ring of Honor before. So when it came to that kind of style, the old school British wrestling style, I loved it and very much looking forward to wrestling him. And I think we had done like an 8-man tag or we wrestled like a 4-way or a tag match. I had been in the ring with him, I think, once or twice before that singles match. But doing it in Boston after I had kind of been, I wouldn't say a jobber, but a lot of those Generation Next 6-man tags, I was taking falls and I was getting beat up a lot. And kind of, I think they were building that sympathy for me being a babyface. So when I did win that title, I think it surprised a lot of people, but it also got a good reaction because I was the underdog. Mm-hmm. And I remember Samoa Joe coming out before the match telling me I was going to choke because I choke everywhere else. And that was that added to it as well, because I think they wanted to do a feud with Joe and I afterwards because Joe kind of looked down on the Pure Belt.
Pure title, so, yeah.
Yeah, he talked a lot of trash about it. So I think...
And then he ended up winning it.
What's that?
Then he ended up winning it. Winning the Pure title.
Yeah. When he won it, I was gone from the company at that point. Because when I lost the Pure Wrestling title, I took a break from wrestling.
Because you had nagging injuries and stuff.
Right, yeah. Right.
My favorite ROH Pure title match, which I told you before, was against Nigel McGuinness at Glory Barner 3. Mm. I think this is just magic, and you can watch it any point, night or day, and it's still a terrific match. Was you aware of how good, well, I don't know how good it was to you, but was you aware of how good the fans thought the match was afterwards, and what did you think actually wrestling it?
No, you know, I didn't pay much attention to the Ring of Honor reviews or feedback or message boards. I know a lot of wrestlers at the time were very paranoid that the fans didn't like their matches and they'd go and see what the fans were saying and they get real personal. And I get it. I mean, those are the fans that might eventually make or break you. And if there's enough people that don't like you, you might not get a job. But in the end, the ones that are on a message board is such a small portion of the fans. And I always gauged on the reaction when I was there live. And mm-hmm. I remember one time specifically, somebody was telling me, oh, you're getting a lot of heat on the message board. So I read it one time and they were talking about how a match was bad. I think it was a match against Jimmy Rave I wrestled one time. It was a show where Bobby Heenan was there with Jim Cornette. I don't remember what show that was, but I remember expecting the crowd to be kind of, booing me or quiet. And I walked out and got a really big pop. And I remember Bobby Heenan pulling me aside and telling me he really, really loved the match. So that night could have been one of those nights where the fans online were trashing it, but the fans in person and Bobby Heenan said it was great. So who do I listen to? The people that were there or some people online who might have an alternate agenda? Could be wrestlers, could be workers. I think there are fans who do go on message boards and critique matches, and that's their right. Good for them, but I don't put too much stock in it. So that's why I think when you look at that stuff and you obsess over it, like a lot of wrestlers used to, I don't think it's good. So I never really know what fans think of a match afterwards. I only know what they're thinking that night based on what I hear.
Yeah. And what did you make of the match based on what you heard on the night?
I definitely thought the reaction was good. Nigel's one of those guys who, again, another guy who was just so easy to work with. Hard hitting, but at the same time, smooth and realistic. And he was so good at combining that kind of, I wouldn't say hokey British style, but, you know, the old school kind of unintended comedy wrestling where you're doing a lot of reversals and holds, but doesn't look super stiff. But mm-hmm. he knew how to incorporate that in with hard hitting wrestling and realistic submissions and reversals. So I thought his blend of wrestling was great. I think he was one of the better guys to ever wrestle there. I was a big fan of him before I even wrestled him. So I still have his documentary somewhere and I've still never watched it.
It's amazing.
Yeah, a friend of mine gave it to me. I have it in a box somewhere and I've never watched it because I just haven't found it. But I've heard good things about it. And I saw it when I was wrestling for Lucha Libre USA. We did a show out in LA and he was there just hanging out. I think he was there to watch and I caught up with him a little bit. And just a great overall guy.
Yeah. No, it's a heartbreaking tale, in all honesty. He, for how good he was to not be wrestling, obviously, you know, I'm glad he's got a commentary, you know, gig and stuff, but he should be wrestling NXT, WWE. So good.
Yeah, so. I think he'd be a star in today's landscape for sure. I don't watch much wrestling anymore. I can't tell you what's going on, but I always thought he was one of those guys that could not just wrestle in front of smart marks, but he could also wrestle on a national audience and get over. That's how good he was. So, but we all have our calling and we all have different reasons for things happening to us. So as long as he's happy, I guess that's all that matters.
Well, exactly. He debuted against Kurt Angle in TNA mm-hmm. in 2009. Him and Bryan Danielson were leaving ROH to go to WWE. Just kind of spoiling the thing for you. But basically, he said that he'd picked up an injury and they said they weren't going to sign him because of the injury. He'd have to have it fixed himself. And it's heartbreaking because of everything he gave to wrestling.
Yeah, I had heard those stories, and I also heard that TNA wasn't going to book him or was going to cut him as well. I don't know how accurate that was, or they weren't. I don't remember.
I wouldn't be surprised at that time, at that moment in time, John. To be honest.
Yeah.
So you said about Nigel McGuinness, and you went against him with Tony Mamaluke against Xavier and Nigel McGuinness. And then you tagged with Nigel McGuinness that Weekend of Thunder. What was it like actually tagging with Nigel?
That was when it was Nigel and I against Samoa Joe and Jay Lethal. Was that the match? Yeah, I remember that match. That was a lot of fun. I think that was also in Boston, I believe. Those are three of the best guys you could be in the ring with. Joe was Joe. Lethal was at the time was a younger guy, but he was just a workhorse and worked his ass off, and everybody liked him. Mm-hmm. Bumped Nigel was Nigel. So when you're in the ring with three other guys who are selfless and they just want to put a good match together, those are the kind of times you have matches that are fantastic. It's when you encounter guys that only care about themselves and getting their stuff in where you're going to have some issues. But Ring of Honor was good at weeding those kind of guys out. And I do remember that match. I actually posted something on my Facebook page a couple of weeks ago of a clip from that match when Samoa Joe was power slamming me. And there's a couple other clips online of that match where he beat me pretty good with some slaps and some kicks. And but you know, that's who he was, and I never complained about it.
Yeah. Going back to what you said about forums and message boards and stuff, I can understand the fans being passionate about wrestling, but I'm much like you. I don't get why it would be personal with wrestlers and stuff. You know, just enjoy the product. But yeah, whether you like this or not, I guess at the time you did. I was one of the people defending yourself on the message boards and stuff and saying, I'm not sure what you're watching because obviously this guy is a tremendous wrestler. So
it's like movies too, though, right? You know, there's some movies out there where people will say this actor sucks. Well, he's getting paid a lot of money to act. So how bad
exactly.
You might not like him. The more accurate, I'm not entertained by this guy or I don't like this guy. But to say somebody sucks or someone's not a good wrestler, well, that's opinion. There's certain actors that are out there that I don't really care to watch, but they might have a really good movie or one night and I might say, damn, that was a good movie. They had a good performance. But just because I don't like them personally in other films, I'm not going to knock them or rag on them for whatever. Yeah. It takes away from the purpose of wrestling, which is to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, and I think like different disciplines in wrestling as well. I'm not a huge like deathmatch wrestling fan, but I respect the sacrifices and the absolute, you know, I guess insanity that goes into wanting to do those matches. But for me, you know, go on.
Yeah. Well, wrestling has always been a variety show, right? If you have
exactly.
Card that are all high flying and spot matches, it might not be that good. If you have all eight submission matches, they're not going to be good. All eight hardcore matches. Mm-hmm. When you have a little bit of something for everybody in the audience, that's when wrestling thrives. And
exactly,
you play the role that you're best at. And again, I don't really care for comedy wrestling. I don't care for super acrobatic, flippy stuff. But if done correctly and done realistically, I'll watch that stuff if it's done. I'm not going to just dismiss it because it's a comedy match. But if it insults my intelligence or insults the fans' intelligence, then I'm going to have a problem with it. But I do understand that there are some fans who like that. And if it's selling tickets and you want to keep doing it, keep doing it. But there's certain principles in wrestling that I believe in that I'm not going to sacrifice no matter how much I get paid. So it's all opinion.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier like teaming with Jimmy Rave, and then you had a series of matches against him for the ROH Pure title. What was it like being on the opposing side to Jimmy Rave in those matches?
Yeah, Jimmy Rave was another guy. I think he had started wrestling around the same time I did, or maybe a little before. He was a veteran, but he was younger, you know, which is, I think he started young. But
he's a veteran who was younger.
Yeah, it's crazy. You see some of these guys that start when they're 15, 16, and they're in their mid-20s. They've been doing it for 10 years, but they're still kids. So
It's true.
But yeah, nice guy. Had good matches with them. That one match I wrestled him, I remember that's the one I was telling you about when Bobby Heenan was on the show. I don't remember. I think I was the champion at the time.
It was a Midnight Express reunion tour.
Yes.
Reunion, sorry.
Because Bobby Heenan pulled me aside and gave me one piece of advice. He said, always wear the title. He said, it's a belt. Wear it. Don't carry it around your shoulder. So to that day, anytime I was a champion, I did that. That match was good. Again, one of those matches where the in-crowd reaction was good, but I think it was critical. People were critical outside of it. But again, what happens that night and what I hear is how I'm going to base the fans' opinions on. But I know Rave, after I had left and he was with Nana, that's when he really kind of started growing into his own and getting really over. And that stuff I didn't get to see, but I had read about it a lot.
Yeah.
And Prince Nana and I still talk. And excuse me, he would tell me about how fun that was.
Yeah. So since you've mentioned, you know, the brain, Bobby Heenan, and a couple of times, what was it like, you know, working with him? On the show,
I just remember it was my first time meeting him, and he was just so friendly. And, you know, you see a lot of guys, and I'm not going to name names, but a lot of old WWE guys or WCW guys or guys that are on independent shows doing signings, guest manager, guest ring announcer, whatever, who will do their thing, get their payday and leave and not watch any of the matches. But Heenan was one of those guys who sat there and watched the matches and pulled people aside and was actually giving back to the business. And I can't imagine being a veteran, going to a show, getting my money and walking away and not watching other people when you know some of these kids are probably wanting advice or criticism or feedback. I just couldn't imagine just being so selfish where you want to just leave. And Heenan was the opposite. Very nice, cordial guy. Most of the stories you hear about him are the same. And I remember, you know, Gary Michael Capetta always told me when he helped me get into Ring of Honor, when he made meals for me at his house, when he watched my tapes, he never wanted anything in return. He just wanted me to help the next person, just to give back.
And yeah, that's pay it forward.
Yeah, what he always instilled in me and always preached, and that's what I try to do. And whenever I'm up in New England, I go up to the Chaotic Wrestling School, which is now the New England Pro Wrestling Academy, and I donate my time and I go help out the new guys because that's how the business gets better. Mm-hmm. Even when I was not wrestling for 4 years, I would go up there a couple times a month and help out because, well, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't you want to help people? That's the way everyone gets better. So
true. And you're wearing their T-shirt as well, so
yeah, perfect. I just noticed that. Yeah,
publicity. Yeah, the New England Pro Wrestling Academy, ladies and gents. It's a great place to go to. So, yeah, you'd mentioned about Prince Nana and Jimmy Rave then. What was it like joining the embassy?
Well, I don't think it lasted very long. I don't remember how long it was. I remember Nana paying me off to join his group, and I accepted. And I remember having some old African T-shirts that one of my friends gave me, and, you know, the old some of those robes, and my friend, and God, some of that stuff was so goofy, but I liked it. I mean, I think it could have gone somewhere good. But again, I had some nagging injuries at the time. I was building a new house. I was tired. I was beat up, and I just needed a break from wrestling mentally and physically. And after I had lost the title to Jay Lethal, I remember saying, I'm taking a little break. And I think I took maybe like a year off and just didn't take any bookings and just decided to rest my body. And I think that's why at my age now, I'm able to get back in the ring and I'm still in really good shape because I haven't continuously done this for 20 years where I've wrestled every single weekend for 20 years. I've taken breaks and given my body a break. And it's very beneficial. I don't think enough guys do that.
So you say about not liking comedy, but then you're happy working with Prince Nana. And
yeah, well, I think comedy,
when it serves its purpose, I think you said as well, yeah, to be fair. And, so,
you know, showing your ass and putting yourself out there is a good thing. It's wrestling. I mean, you can't take yourself too serious. So being being somebody that's kind of on the goofy side or going out there and wearing something corny is good. I'm talking about the comedy or goofiness where you don't deliver punches and things are phony and you're fake punching people and doing these slow motion matches that I've seen online. That's stuff that I'll never understand. I'm not going to knock anybody who does it, but I just could never participate in that and never would.
Okay. So, yeah, you mentioned this as well because you've been reading my notes like everyone else does. Your matches with Jay Lethal, did you see at the time that he would become the franchise of ROH today?
Yeah, I could see it for sure. Not because Jay Lethal is a good wrestler, which he is, not just because he's reliable and he always was there and always did what he was told because he did that too. It was his attitude, I think, outside of the ring. He's just a very nice human being. I remember wrestling him on an independent show in New Jersey long before Ring of Honor, and his parents were in the crowd, and I was talking shit to his parents as I was beating him up. And then they came to a show a couple months later where I wrestled somebody else, and they were giving me heat the second I walked out, and I said, my goodness gracious, these people are relentless. And to this day, that's just the kind of person he is. In fact, he's the reason I'm doing this show on March 14th because he reached out to my friend Kevin, who's also a worker, and basically said that he was looking for my phone number. So Kevin at the time was down here in Florida, and we were going to go – this was right before the Conor McGregor, Donald Cerrone UFC fight a couple like a month ago. And we were going up to Tyson Kidd, TJ Wilson lives up in Tampa. So we were going up to his house to watch the UFC because we're all good friends. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, Jay Lethal will be there. You can talk to him then. Lethal wasn't there. So I said, well, you know, I want to know what he wanted. I kind of knew. Kevin said, well, they're doing. He wants to see if you want to come to Ring of Honor for a show. So mm-hmm. I sent Lethal a message on Facebook Messenger, and I asked him, and he said, yeah. I said, can I recommend you? I said, sure. And like a day later, they contacted me about doing it. So it's good to be thought of. I don't know if it's good to be thought of as an old guy in the past, but
you're a few topics and questions ahead, John. But I was going to get to that as well.
I'm still in as good shape as anybody else, and I made a claim early in my wrestling career that nobody would be able to blow me up in the ring, and I still are lit by that. So,
yeah. Okay. Sorry about those technical difficulties. My next question, if I haven't asked it before, is you made your return once again in your home state of Boston against Nigel McGuinness. I probably should have asked this earlier. So you wrestled him for the you wrestled him in the tag and then tagged with him and defended your pure title and then in the return. Did you see from the beginning what Nigel McGuinness would become in ROH?
Yeah, definitely. I thought that he was, like I said earlier, I thought he was one of those guys that he combined the British style and the American style really well. I think mm-hmm. he was mainly trained here in the States, is from what I remember.
Trained with Les Thatcher in Heartland Wrestling Association.
Right, but he also was the guy that didn't really forget where he came from, and he embraced that British style when nobody else was really doing it. With the exception of Doug Williams, nobody else was really wrestling the British style over here. So he had that niche of hard-hitting technical wrestling mixed with British intricate spots. So, yeah, I definitely saw it. He was one of my favorites to work with, and that return match was – I don't think I was announced. I think Nigel came out at the beginning of the show and introduced me kind of as a surprise, and we had a quick little 10-minute match. It was fun, and that was the last time I was in a Ring of Honor ring.
Yep, until now.
Until, yes.
Yeah, so, we're skipping forward. That's 2006, so we're coming up to almost 14 years. What's your thoughts on ROH in 2020?
Well, I'm not going to lie and sit here and say that I've watched too much of it. I don't watch much of wrestling at all. And it's not because I don't like wrestling. It's, I'm busy. And it's kind of one of those things where I feel like if I watch too much of it, the urge to go back will be there. And not that I physically can't wrestle. I'm good. I feel good. A little wear and tear, which is natural after doing it for 15 years full time and then 5 years of kind of part-time stuff. So it's normal, but there's a lot of stuff on TV I do not like. And I'm not talking about Ring of Honor. I'm talking about independence all the way up to WWE. There's just a lot of stuff I don't like. And I think it's just kind of one of those things where when you spend 15 years obsessing over something and that's all you really do and talk about and think about, you kind of say, well, I don't really want to have anything to do with it. So I have seen some Ring of Honor stuff on their website, some of the matches they've posted, and I think it's just as good as it was when I was there. Talking to a few people, they are trying to go back to their roots of being more of a technical wrestling company because there's not much of that on TV anymore.
No.
Seeing a lot of acrobats and high-flying in spots now is everywhere, so I think they're trying to maybe go back to what kind of got them on the map in the first place. But again, like we said, wrestling is a variety show, so you don't want to have too much of one thing. So hopefully they reintroduce it with balance and not lose any fans, but try to gain new ones. So I'm excited to go back for sure. And there's a lot of guys that were there when I was there that are still there. So catching up with those guys, wrestling in front of some new fans and seeing where the future goes from there is exciting.
See, I think the most important thing is they kind of lost like their identity. You said about the pure title not being around long enough. It really, well, I guess it kind of peaked with the Nigel McGuinness, Bryan Danielson match at Unified when they unified the titles. So I can understand it being, taken away then. But me and my co-host Steve and Jackson have been, shouting from the rooftops about bringing back the pure title, for example, and having a pure wrestling match on the show, because that's your identity. Like TNA, Impact Wrestling is the X division and then the Knockouts division. For ROH, it was about technical wrestling. It was about pure wrestling.
Right.
So we'd been shouting from the rooftops that you should bring back a pure division and a pure title. And then finally, 13 weeks after we started the show, they talked about the ROH pure title coming back, and we couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that's good. And I also know Jonathan Gresham has really been pushing forward as well. So
yeah.
I think enough people have said something where they took notice and they're going to give it another go.
Well, yeah, he was wrestling pure wrestling matches in 2019. I think what actually pushed it over the top is Will Ospreay tweeted about it and said, you know, he would like to wrestle for this title if the rules were changed up a little bit. But if with the pure title coming back, I don't want anything to change.
Right.
You know, it was great the way it was. So, one of my questions was being contacted for past versus present, but you've kind of already discussed that, I think.
Right, right.
So a question from my co-host, Stephen. Thoughts on coming back to ROH?
Yeah, nothing negative, no negative feelings at all. I think if I was out of shape or my body was banged up, I'd be a little hesitant or maybe a little nervous, but that's not the case at all. I feel good. I'm rested. You know, even though I didn't wrestle for 4 years, 5 years, I took about 2 years off. I did a show in New Zealand, then I took another 2 years off. And then about a year and a half ago, I wrestled about 7 shows up in Massachusetts. But other than that, I haven't really been active. But there's always that illusion that, well, if you're not wrestling, you're out of shape. And I've been in the gym consistently for the past 20 years. I haven't really been out of it. So, but wrestling shape is different. It's a different animal.
Yeah.
The only way to really be in wrestling shape is to wrestle. So if it's something I'm going to pursue after this match, I do need to do it more often. And it might be a little bit of ring rust at the beginning. But other than that, I'm excited. I'm always confident in my abilities. And I think that it'll be a good night.
Yeah. And you said you don't want to be blowing up the whole of your career. You're going up against Overkill, Mark Hastings, which is one of the guys in terms of British wrestling at the time, like 2009, was just coming through. Mm-hmm. In 2020, he's trying to get into the main event and going up for the ROH World title this weekend. What do you make of your opponent for past versus present?
I wrestled Mark before in England. I think the second tour I was there, maybe, or the first tour, I did wrestle him in a singles match. And I think I spent the night at his place. I do remember sleeping on the floor one time over in the UK, I think it was in his apartment. So we know each other well. I haven't seen or spoken to him in a long, long time. But I did watch one of his matches on the Ring of Honor website purposely, because I am wrestling him. And definitely was a good match, and you know, he's great, and he was great back then. And another one of those guys who's just always loved wrestling. You could always tell. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it, and I know a lot of the fans have already messaged me saying that it's one of the matches they're looking forward to the most. So that's it's a good thing to hear, and hopefully we deliver.
Yeah. Once again, thank you very much for your patience, John, with these technical difficulties. Of course, it's going to happen. I think my last question. Oh, actually, me and my co-host Stephen were like, when we saw that the match has been announced for past versus present, and we saw your name, we was like, oh, you know, Hurricane John Waters is coming back. And obviously, I sent you that link about doing the tribute to you, and hopefully, it was of great standing. And we was like, oh, who is he going to take on? And then when it was Mark Haskins, we were like, okay, this is the perfect match. So, just wanted to say that. We mentioned this a little bit earlier. So what do you make of the reinstatement of the ROH Pure title?
Again, I think it's one of those things where a lot of the fans, from what I've been told, and some of the workers have told me, that a lot of the fans – that they feel like they've lost some fans from the early days, because they've kind of lost, like you said, maybe not so much their identity, but maybe they've gone away from their roots too much. And I think that happens a lot when you become a TV wrestling company. I think when you're catering to a niche crowd of underground DVD traders and live fans and message board fans, you're focused more on pure wrestling and submission stuff. But I think when you do go to a TV audience, you do have to keep in mind that there are probably more casual fans watching than smart fans. But I think there is a way to do it where you're kind of satisfying both audiences. Again, that's by making wrestling a reality, a variety show, and having multiple types of styles on one show, marketing it the best you can, and then slowly trying to get those casual fans to like pure wrestling through the commentary, through the storytelling, through realistic wrestling stuff that the fans can relate to. So there's not one quick fix, but bringing the pure title back could be good if the fans watching on TV and the fans in the audience are explained clearly what the rules are and the matches are suspenseful enough where the rules really start to grab people's attention. I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
And it's about getting the right guys in there and then the right people to convey the message on TV and through commentary.
Yeah. For ourselves, we're like 16 weeks in with the ROH review, and our favorite match is from last year's Glory Barner, which was between the Foundation, Jonathan Gresham, and Alex Shelley. And it was a technical wrestling masterpiece.
Yeah, I'd love to watch it.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I think my last question to you is, well, what are you doing April 10th and 11th?
April 10th and 11th? I don't know. Is there a show those nights?
Those are the pure title tournament nights.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I haven't been talked to about them yet. But again, let's be honest. Ring of Honor hasn't seen me wrestle in how long. So for them to ask me to do shows in the future where they haven't seen what I'm going to look like or what I'm going to wrestle like might not be the best financial decision on their part. So maybe after the March show, when we go out there and we have a good match, then they might say, hey, let's get this former pure champion in there wrestling for the title. And I guess we'll see. That remains to be seen.
Yeah. So far, Doug Williams, Jonathan Gresham, Alex Shelley, and Rocky Romero in the tournament.
Cool. Excellent.
So, yeah. But my thing is, if they bring back an ROH pure champion, I think you should get a bye to the next round.
Well, one less match to wrestle. I'm down for that, for sure.
Exactly, yeah. So, just in closing, John, is there anything you'd like to plug or like to talk about your social media or anything?
You know, I don't. I know Twitter's the new thing. I don't use it that often. I have a Twitter page. It's at @HJohnWalters. I don't use it much. I've always kind of been a Facebook guy because I can kind of excuse me, write more and express my opinion more eloquently than I can on Twitter. And I think Twitter is so dramatic sometimes. Oh, Facebook is too. It's like all social media seems to bring the worst out of people. But
it got me and you back together, John. So it's
for
not
sure,
that.
Yeah. There's definitely good to it as well. But
yeah,
my Facebook page is facebook.com/RJBrewer1070. There's no way to change that name, even though it's under John Walters now. And yeah, those two are the only real social media I use. Looking forward to going back to Ring of Honor and interested to see if there'll be more shows after that.
Absolutely. Like I said, when we got it as breaking news on the show, and hopefully you saw the video to go with the audio, but I was so happy because, like I said, Paul London, CM Punk and yourself in ROH. And yeah, we can't wait to see past versus present against Mark Haskins, and hope against hope that you're back in that pure title tournament come April 10th and 11th.
For sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, John.
All right, Oliver. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, so we are extremely proud to be a part of the Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast team. They are our hosts, and we really appreciate it. So go follow them on Twitter @BBGWWrestling, @BBGWPod, and BBGWrestling.com. We have a partnership with Powerslam.tv, and they have over 6,500 hours of professional wrestling from 140 plus promotions. Use that on us for free for a month using the code BROKENFREE. To myself, I'm a three-time pro wrestling author, along with my other nicknames, as we started at the start of the show. Firstly, fans' perspective, one man's exploration of British wrestling. ROH is in this book, so that's the reason to buy it. I was at Unified in 2006. I was in the same hotel as ROH wrestlers in 2007 and at the Liverpool double shot in 2007 too. Second up is a book that I don't usually promote, but it has ROH alumni in it. It's a fan's perspective, 2016, what a year to be a fan of WWE. If you want to find out what happened with AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, etc., make sure you read this book. And lastly, fans' perspective, how my lifelong dream became a nightmare. I was at the Orlando double shot in 2008, and I took ROH alumni, my modern-day favourite wrestler, Paul London, who's making a special appearance at Past versus Present, which we'll get to shortly, to the main event and to the World Heavyweight title, and it's in this book. And then for all three books, are available on paperback and Kindle, and Kindle Limited for free, signed via my Big Cartel. So contact me on a fansperspective.bigcartel.com. And that is fine and dandy. Lastly, our social media. So Twitter is at ROH Review. Instagram is at ROH Review. We now have a Facebook page, facebook.com/ROH Review 2019, because that's when we were established. YouTube is one of those funny things that we have to put in the description. And our email is ROHReviewOutlook.com. Comments, questions, feedback, send it our way via any of those social medias, and we will crack on with what you need to know. Yeah, we've just under 50 seconds to go. Thank you very much for your all your support so far. We will be back with ROH Review Episode 18, which Stephen might be flying solo for. How's that for a cliffhanger? So yeah, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Thank you very much for all the support from the wrestlers, from the fans, from the 10,000 odd listeners on SoundCloud, from the 300 odd viewers on YouTube. It's been fantastic. It's been a great 17 weeks, and you know, we'll continue on from here, and we've 10 seconds to go. Thank you very much, everyone, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now. Bye.